Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
It's 3 o'clock somewhere. Time for a My Mochi ice cream snack. My Mochi ice cream is cool, creamy scoops of premium ice cream wrapped in sweet, pillowy dough. And get this, all of My Mochi's fabulous flavors like strawberry, mango, double chocolate, and cookies and cream are only around 80 calories per piece. Talk about a guilt-free, indulgent experience. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned, gluten-free mochis that are great for grab-and-go. So feel good while curbing your afternoon cravings or the midnight munchies. Yeah, you know who you are with the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream. Find My Mochi ice cream at Target or visit MyMochi.com to locate a grocery store near you.
Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1089. Over at ID10T.com/vintage, we're adding new stuff. Pretty much every week, we've gotten some vintage iron-ons and we're ironing them onto some vintage clothing. So we got some like vintage ET stuff. We're putting some stuff on vintage members-only jackets just because it's fun. And we got a heat press machine, and so we're playing with it. And so go to id10t.com/vintage to see what's there. There's also new items there, too. We're adding more and more stuff. And subscribe to the email list. Follow us on Instagram. You know, do all the things. We really appreciate it. Let's talk about you, the ID10T community. Events at ID10T.com, like Melissa, who writes, I just want to share an amazing business two friends of mine run. It's called R&F Haberdashery out of Davenport, Iowa. And they make dog collars, cat collars, leashes, and bow ties. Bow ties for dogs and cats. They're all handmade. All kinds of unique designs. Check them out at R&F Haberdashery, HABERDASHERY.com. And follow them on Facebook as well, R&F Haberdashery. Thank you so much. We have a dog. Sometimes my wife has been known to put him in a bow tie or a straight tie. I posted a picture of it on Instagram. And you know what? He looks quite smart. I was going to say he looked fetching, and I'm like, it's too punny. But then now that I'm explaining it to you, I've already said it, so I should have just said it to begin with and committed to it. But that's not what I did. So thank you so much, Melissa, for writing in events at id10t.com. This episode is Mr. Ronald Funches, one of my favorite people in the world. Just a brilliant person and comedian and actor, performer, gamer. Ron is just a wonderful, 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 wonderful human being. He has a new show on Quibi called Nice One, which is a brilliant spin on a comedy panel show where everyone who comes on has to say something nice about whatever the topic is. And it's a blast. I did it. It's up there now. And so you can watch it. And then also he's got his podcast Getting Better. So you can get Ron Funches there. He's got a bunch of acting gigs coming out. And this is being released on September 2nd, 2020, September 5th. 2020, Ron is going to do a live socially distanced show. So he's doing a live show in front of a socially distanced audience, which is going to be available on the internet for 24 hours. I believe it's at 7 p.m. Pacific time. He's going to do, because he wanted to do a live show and he wanted to put it up, but it's only going to be up for a day. It's not going to live forever on the internet like so many other things do. So it's just a quick flash. If you go to ronfunches.com, you can find info for it. Or if you go to Eventbrite and search Ron Funches, it's called Ron Funches Awakening, a live stream comedy event. And that link will have all the details and information that you need so you can watch it. I just couldn't be happier for him. I love him so much. And let's get into the ID10T podcast number 1089 with Mr. Ronald Funches, owner of all the points. From At Midnight, let's roll the thing.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
Ron.
Hi, Chris.
Boop, how you doing?
Boop.
Oh, I saw you for a second, and then the video
I
went
know.
Away.
There you are. Go. Here I am.
Hello.
Hi.
It's so good to see you. First of all, I love you, Ron Funches. Secondly, how are you? What have you been up to?
I love you, too. Nice to see you, too. I'm doing well. You can see on my finger. I'm married now. I got
That's
married.
A wedding band. I see a wedding
That's
band.
It's a wedding band. I got married on Friday, last week. It was beautiful. She's the best. I love her. It was a fun, simple wedding at a place on La Brea that they just let four people there, all in masks. So I just had my best friend, and she had one of her friends, and my son was there. And then we FaceTimed my mom and just kept it really simple. And you know, this time where everything feels not solid, I just was like, I know I love her. I know it's going to be a chill wedding. It was super chill. We just had the wedding, ordered some food, and then watched 90 Day Fiancé until we fell asleep and didn't have sex until the next day. So.
there's something that's really so wonderful about all of that without feeling the pressure of like, did we do it? Did we do everything we're supposed to do with a wedding? Did we have all of the, oh my, was everyone happy? Was everyone, mm-hmm. you know, because weddings can tend to be about a lot of times everyone but the couple. Oh, you know,
yeah.
One parent wants this experience. Another relative wants that experience. Someone else is, you know.
People can't sit next to this person. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, and the emotional pressures are real. Why was I sat at this table? Does that mean I'm not blah, blah, blah? Or why did you put that person at that? Yeah, that's all that crap.
Yeah, I like keeping it really simple. The only thing I missed out on, though, is that, you know, I never thought I'd get married again after my first marriage. And so I really, like, I love celebrating it. And I would have loved to be like, this is my wife and I love her. And everyone, here are all my friends through my life. And we're all coming together. So I still miss that. Cause I, you know, I would have loved for you to be there. I would have loved for my mom to be there. That would have been nice. But I think there's still just a lot of positives in the way that we did it. And the fact that there was no obligation, there was just like, well, we just really love each other and that's what feels solid and everything else feels not solid. So let's lean into this.
You know, I'm obviously people can only hear you. They can't see you talking, but it's one of the things that's so great about podcasting another podcaster is that your setup is great. The audio sounds great. You have your own headphones. You have a great mic. Like it already, you know, a lot of times I'm sure you've had this too, where people are just kind of using the external microphone on their speaker and it's like, mm-hmm. it works, but from one podcaster to another, I appreciate your setup.
Oh, absolutely. I understand exactly. There's some of them. I was like, oh, well, I guess maybe this one's going to have to be a Patreon exclusive.
Oh, that's so funny. It's a special one for just the fans, you guys.
Yeah, because you're going to really have to love it to make it through these sound issues.
You paid for this. This is special. This is what you get. That's really fantastic. How are you enjoying? I mean, I remember when you started the podcast. Is it still, has it evolved in any particular surprising ways, or like how do you see it now versus when you started?
We just had 2-year anniversary and mostly I just think I'm a better listener now, which I take into my interviews the other way. So I think I'm a much better listener. I don't just try to lead and direct things where I want to go. I just start and then see where things take me. And if they go off road, I'm better at getting things back on. And then I learned more to just embrace talking about myself and to make myself a focal point of the podcast, which sometimes I had been hesitant to do. I'm kind of hesitant to do that a lot of times in my comedy. I like collaboration. I like being a part of an ensemble, and I'm learning because I have goals. I want to be a leading man and things. And so I have to learn to like, oh, people like me and people want to hear more about me. And so I have to continue to just be more open.
Can confirm that people like you. I swear to God, even up until the last shows that I was doing before the quarantine hit, which was like maybe a week or two before, I was at the Punchline in San Francisco, and I always meet people after the shows. Without fail, I hear, I miss At Midnight, followed by I love Ron Funches. Without fail, at every set of shows I was doing, I would hear that. So people do love you and they do want to hear about you.
Oh, I appreciate hearing that. And I would always get the reverse. People say, I love At Midnight. And then they go, is Chris Hardwick really as nice as he seems? And I'm like, yeah, he's really nice. Well,
you know, that part of the, I mean, I'm not a comedian. I've talked to a lot of other comedians. I'm not a comedian. I love doing stand-up. It's my favorite thing to do. I don't feel like I'm choking inside from not being on stage all the time, but I do miss the personal connections. I do miss going and seeing people's faces and being able to say hi to them afterwards. Do you have the same experience, or is a large part of it, like, do you just miss being on stage most?
No, I miss the whole aspect of it, all of it, the whole kit and caboodle. I miss getting on planes and traveling to places. I miss not knowing, like, I miss meeting new friends and people who had never heard of me before coming up to me with this look on their face, or, you know, because I'm a very chill guy, but sometimes I would go and I see people and like they would be shaking when they would meet me, you know, and the fact that I would have any type of effect like that on someone always was all made me feel awestruck. So I miss like all of it. I miss people applauding when I walk in a room. I miss just landing and going and take my nap, my pre-show nap. I miss all of that.
The ritual. You miss the ritual of it.
Yeah. I get so used to it. And for a while I was hesitant to do any of these like Zoom shows or anything like that, because I was like, oh, I just want to stay ready for when the live shows come back and they're going to mess up my rhythm. And took me a while, but I saw Maria Bamford do a Zoom show where I was like, man, she's still solid, she's still killing it, and she's not getting the feedback that she's used to, but she's still providing such a service to people. And seeing people in these Zoom rooms that I had seen in clubs, that I had seen, you know, and I could recognize these people, this guy's from Denver, this lady's from Seattle, and I was like, oh, okay, I need to continue honing this, because who knows how long this will last.
Well, yeah, and you know, never forget that you are an experienced comedian, and one thing comedians can be pretty good at is adapting to different circumstances in which to perform. Because if you've done college shows or corporate gigs or club shows or theater shows, or you know, or you've shown up to a college where they go, oh, stand over there at the end of the cafeteria and everyone's studying for finals and you have to figure out how to make it work. You know, it's like mm-hmm.
Ithaca University.
Did that happen to you there?
Yeah, that exact thing. Go into the corner of the cafeteria. They're going to be eating food and going about their day. And you just do your best.
Those sort of adaptation stories are the stories that help, you know, help form who we are and how we survive. I think, you know, comedians are really good at adapting and, you know, surviving in performance situations. And so I have not done a Zoom show yet, but how are you, how many have you done and how are you finding them?
I've just done a handful, maybe about four. And the reason why, because I kind of like set a goal afterwards. I was like, okay, I'm going to make my own live stream show, which I'm doing September 5th, where through Christopher Titus has been doing a lot of his own specials, and he's doing a Titus reunion show. And so we're going to have like 10 people in the audience and masks, socially distanced. And then we're going to Zoom it or YouTube it out live, and then people can watch it up to 24 hours later. And so I was like, well, if I'm doing that, I better practice. And so I started doing a couple of Zoom shows. And of course, they're like, some are better than others. Some people know how to police the rooms better and focus on and turn off people's mics, because that's the real issue, is that we're never had, because every part of the room is black except for the lights that's on me, the focus is on me, the microphone's on me. When you're doing these Zoom shows, they're just in their house, and there's this full 360 degree of things that they could look at, or something could come through, their dog can come and mess with them, you know? One guy's just like in the middle of his work eating Jimmy John's. You're just like...
Nate Bargatze a little while back said on the podcast that he was doing a corporate gig and someone's mic wasn't muted, and one of the people who worked at this company, he just heard go, I don't know, just some dumb comedian or something like that. It's like, and then everyone heard that, you know? So of course he played with it, but yeah, the idea that it's very difficult to get a room of even a few hundred people to sort of focus and feel like part of the show. But wow, when they don't even really have to be accountable to a room full of other people, it's like that is a little bit of a rodeo, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's a bit much, but I think it kind of takes me back to my open mic days, right? It's like, okay, focus on my rhythm, what I'm about, stay in the moment. If something weird happens, definitely comment on it. I've had a few toilet flushes during shows. And you just gotta lean into it, lean into the chaos.
Yeah, and I mean, you have to, because if... You know, at the core of it, with stand-up, you're essentially creating like a flash community experience. Everyone comes together for one experience and then sort of breaks apart afterwards. And so, yeah, this is just a different forum for new types of experiences. So it's wonderful that you're able to, you know, incorporate those and play with them and make it part of the show. And I'm sure...
Yeah. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't, you know, at the end of it, when you have that glow and that excitement and that happiness, you don't have that. You just kind of feel sweaty and you feel...
Well, that happens.
Yeah. So it's more of that. It becomes a lot less about, oh, what I'm getting out of it, and more about like, oh, it's a really stressful time and some people really need this. And so you just kind of like, oh, I'm providing a service, even though it doesn't feel as good to me as it used to, you know?
Yeah. Have you done the Animal Crossing show?
I'm doing it tonight. Or fantastic. Tomorrow night.
Comedian, yeah. Jenny Yang, who's an Animal Crossing fan, created this brilliant idea of doing shows in Animal Crossing. And it's just such a great idea. You're doing it tonight. Are you doing Animal Crossing specific material, or are you just pretending like it's just like a regular comedy club?
I'll do a mix of both. I'm sure I'll do a mix of both, because I could definitely talk trash about Tom Nook and the things going on in the world today and Timmy and Tommy and that creepy dog that has his own little photo island that we know what he's doing that night. It gets weird over there.
Oh, yeah. There was that weird month where you had to go to that island and like take wedding photos of... the characters. I'm pretty sure they were llamas maybe, but in New Leaf, they were the ones that would mod your furniture, but now you mod all your own furniture. So all their role seems to be like, well, they renewed their vows. Like, it was a very complicated story. They renewed their vows and so, or something. I don't know. Did you do that challenge?
No, I don't mess with Harv. I never liked him from day one when I met him with his headband. He looked like the type of, like a trust fund hippie, you know, where it's just like, he wants to do drugs and acid with you, but it's like, well, you got something to fall back on, Harv. The rest of us got to go to work. We don't all have mommy and daddy's money.
That's really funny. Yeah, the Harv thing is really strange. There's a lot of stuff about the, because I'm Animal Crossing accidentally came out at the perfect time to be absorbed by Animal Crossing. But I am sort of fascinated by, number one, it's nice to escape into a completely idealized world where the worst things that can happen is that you have to maybe catch a ribbon eel for someone and you get bitten by a mosquito, maybe sometimes a scorpion or a tarantula. But in general, it is this just very idyllic, yeah. It's perfect.
I think for me, what really made, because I feel like, yeah, the couple of video games have kind of saved my sanity this year. And they're kind of on the opposite ends of the spectrum. I've been playing a lot of Call of Duty because that just helps me get out a lot of aggression. It's kind of been like a social game for me to talk to with my friends. And I started my own Twitch channel and been hanging out with people that way. And then Animal Crossing, I think it has the cuteness and the joy. And it also has this like, well, oh, I'm in control. I can plant these flowers where I want, these things where I want. I can see the impact of what I've done. And I think at a time where we kind of all feel like we're less in control and less impactful, that's why that game really helped me this year.
How is your, I said to someone the other day, boy, I wish I put the time and energy into my career that I have put into my Animal Crossing island. It is so well organized, and really, I really thought it out. How's yours? Do you have different sections, or do you kind of have an area where you just drop stuff? Like, what's your island like?
Right now it's pretty abandoned. I've moved over mostly to playing Fall Guys a lot. I've been playing a lot of Fall Guys and Ghost of Tsushima. But my island basically is that I took a corner of the island, the full like four square blocks of that island, and I made that my estate. So like I have the whole private beach. Mm-hmm. I have a big house. I have a gigantic backyard with telescope and things like that. And then I have a full gigantic front yard with a barbecue and a moon rover, you know, the things you would have in a wrestling ring in my backyard covered in barbed wire. And then all of my residents are kind of sectioned off into the right-hand corner of the island and what I professionally refer to as the projects.
So I put all my islanders are on one section of an island too. Like my island is like sectioned off into three or four strips, and I have water features running through it that separated them. And so they're all in one section too. And I knew we were in deep when my wife started buying the amiibo cards.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just like inviting the strangest, like I have a sheep who's a clown. I have a robotic dog.
Pietro.
Yeah. I have a mime dog named Marcel and a superhero cat. Like I just got all the delightful weirdos and I was able to pull them in, and she kind of assembled her super friends as well. And you know, it's sometimes I wonder, like, should I be writing instead of doing this? But every morning, you know, I have my routine. I have my coffee. I dig up the fossils. I clean up the weeds and the sticks. And, you know, I look for the red fox, who's almost never there. Maybe once.
Never there. I hate the fact that he's never there. He sucks. But also, I hated Pietro. I got to tell you that. And he scared me, and I got to get rid of him. I kicked him out of the island. His facial expressions weirded me out. I felt like if anyone in this island is a serial murderer that is running from a past, it's clearly him. So I had to get rid of him. He couldn't live on my island. And then I found out he was a pretty rare villager, but I didn't care.
You had to get rid of him. I also have this, I have a rabbit who's actually a gyroid named Coco. The gyroids from the previous game where they just have eye sockets. And so, you know, Coco, the gyroid rabbit, looks kind of like a horror show as well. So it is a weird mashup, but I calculated that I think there's 41 or 43 art pieces that you can get from your museum that between paintings and sculptures, and the amount of times that Red actually shows up, and now he can show up and have all fakes.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't A, time travel sometimes or visit other people's islands who are willing to let you take art that you don't have, it could take you like 2 to 3 years to fill your art museum with the infrequency of how much he shows up.
Yeah, well, but that was kind of the hook of this game, right? It was meant for you to be playing a little bit at a time for years, but instead it's been put into this new world where we're like, well, I want to play Animal Crossing for 8 hours a day, so I need some more content. So it's not the game's fault, except for it needs to speed up its chat and let me craft multiple items at once. That's what I don't understand.
I fully agree. It's like, to have the same, you know, to have to wake up Gulliver every single time, like, and I got to poke him 3 or 4 times. He's got to tell me about how he lost his communicator. We got to go through this whole dance, you know. And yeah, you should be able to craft multiple items and stack more things, you know, because you're going to run out of room. If you are going to play the game for years, you're just going to run out of room for stuff.
Yeah, there's some problems with the game, but overall, I love it, and I appreciate it.
I do too. I wish one feature that I don't even know if they've ever considered is I wish I could buy real estate like on my wife's island. to have a house there that I could, and she could buy one on mine, so that we could each be villagers on each other's island. So we could have like an away home where you could store stuff, and we could play. It would encourage us to play together more, because I could go to her island and put stuff in that house. And, you know, now I just feel like, oh, we go to each other's islands. We kind of get what we need. We say hi, and then we kind of, you know,
your separate ways.
Yeah, we go back. I do wonder what kind of expansions they'll, you know, what kind of DLC will happen in the coming years.
Yeah, I just love that, because I, you know, when I was playing on my Switch Lite, and then I started streaming games, and I was like, oh, I would like to stream Animal Crossing, but I'd have to do it on my regular Switch, and you can't transfer islands. You can't do anything like that. And I was like, well, I don't want to start over from the beginning. So I just decided not to stream it. But I mean, I think it would be so much fun. I like Jenny's show. I think it would just be, I don't know if they already are doing it, but I mean, someone has to come up with that idea of just doing a crib style show where different celebrities and people are just showing off their Animal Crossing house and stuff.
I think Gary Whitta was doing that, the writer. I believe he had like an Animal Crossing chat show where he would have, and I think that's the one where Danny Trejo came on and like showed off his Animal Crossing.
Oh,
island.
That's cool. I gotta check it out.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to talk to other comedians and visit their islands and stuff and sort of figure out, and even my wife, that very issue that you're talking about, they only just made cloud saves a thing in a recent update. Before that, if your game got damaged, if your console got damaged, that was it. I had one day where I woke up and there was a data corruption file with my game. And I was like, well, I think that was just 3 months of my life that just, I think that's done. Fortunately, it fixed itself and everything was fine. But yeah, eventually you'll be able to transfer to another game console. But she did that. She just started over after like 4 months. She was like, you know what? I've dropped my old Switch so many times. If I drop it one more time, that might be it. So she got a new one, a new Leaf themed, a New Horizons themed Switch model, and slowly started transferring all her stuff and kind of started from scratch. And she said, you know what? I actually really liked doing it because of how much I know about the game now that I didn't know when I started the first time. So it allowed her to
start already hybrid flowers already.
Yeah. It was really just kind of the month-long process of getting resident services up and running, getting Nook's Cranny up and, you know, like into its various incarnations. But other than that, like she actually really liked the process of starting over, you know, with more experienced eyes.
Okay. Well, I might do that, but I know that fear. I know that fear of your file being corrupted. And before the quarantine, I had lost my Switch twice on a flight and was, every time was just like, well, this is it. And luckily both times they found it and sent it back to me. But I guess, you know, a lot of people hating on airlines, and I do too, but I gotta thank the good people at Delta for finding my Switch twice and not keeping it. So I think
anyone who's ever played a game understands it's not the physical item. It's the irreplaceable save that's on there that I cannot replace. That's where the value lies. You're very, very, very fortunate.
Oh, I know.
So you said you're playing some other games. What are they?
Mm-hmm. Fall Guys, which is this real fun multiplayer battle royal game without shooting. It's like a game show, kind of like MXC, like those old Japanese obstacle course game shows. So it breaks down in like five rounds, and there's one runner at the end of the game, and it's really colorful and fun, and also cutthroat and terrifying sometimes. Then a lot of Call of Duty, and then I've been playing this game called Ghost of Tsushima, where you're just like a Japanese samurai that sneaks around murdering people. That's real fun.
It sounds like you're able to game multitask, and I am not. I am so singularly focused when I'm playing a game. It happened with Skyrim. I played Skyrim for a year and a half and nothing else. Mm-hmm. When I was playing Breath of the Wild, I played that and nothing else. Then
as a Switch buddy, of yours, I am well aware that you
oh, yeah, you can see
Breath of the Wild
I am
for
not
about
diverted.
A solid year.
There was a period of time I was playing Splatoon 2 all the time, and then, you know, and then now it's just Animal Crossing and nothing else, because I can't my sort of emotional game core cannot extract from one game experience and jump to another. I can't packet switch in that way.
Linear.
And so by the time I finish Animal Crossing, which is who knows when, there will be so many more games that I need to catch up on.
Mm-hmm.
Lydia's
no, I'd always been that way. Yeah, I like to have a multiplayer game, a story single player game that I'm playing, and then sometimes just a game for traveling.
Man, that's really amazing. That's amazing that you're able to do that. I'm jealous because I know that it would be so much more of a rewarding gaming experience if I were able to do that. But, you know, it seems like I'm stuck in Animal Crossing for the foreseeable future.
No, although, I like obsessives, though. Sometimes, like, my friends are like that. Like, I would try Stardew Valley and stuff. Like, my farm would just be this rudimentary little chicken farm, and my friends would have like full breweries going on and wineries and making gems and jewels, and I could just never get that deep because I'd move on to the next thing. So the grass is greener on the other side for both of those things.
But what an amazing time that you have to spend with your family, to spend with your wife. You know, it is as heartbreaking of a situation as it is, and I feel really grateful that I'm able to spend all this time with my wife, that I feel like, oh my gosh, we would have both been traveling all the time. You know, it's like it's really sort of reminded me, like, yeah, your personal relationships shouldn't be that thing that you just default to at the end of the day, you know, when you do all of your other shit. It shouldn't be the whatever's left, it should go back. It needs to be like we need to make time to spend together, and so that part I'm very excited for you, that, you know, you've just gotten married and you get to spend the first part of your marriage together in this way. That's really kind, that part's kind of nice.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think in any type of situation that feels oppressive and is like holding you in place, it kind of just refocuses what your priorities are, and in some ways, like, for me, when I was looking around, I was like, oh, like the way I was going around, moving around every day, going to different cities every week, like it was almost like this hamster wheel that felt productive to me. But in reality, once I got a little break, I was like, that was killing me. That was like bad for my health. It wasn't, you know, allowing me to get a regular amount of sleep or to focus on my diet or focus on my exercise. I had to always find ways to fit those things in last. And like you said, just now I'm like, okay, like I just love spending time with my son. Like, he's so cool. Such a weird, fun little guy. I like that he's 17 now, and he followed his own rule that I was not a house rule, that he was like, oh, I can't watch R-rated films. I can't watch TVMA things until I'm 17. And now he's 17 and he's all about it. He's watching 24. He's watching John Wick. We watched Breaking Bad together as a family.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Nice. Yeah.
That's really fantastic. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, because again, when you start, as any performer, you know, you get very focused on yourself because you build this career, particularly as a stand-up, because you're basically the whole package when you're a stand-up. You're the marketer, you're the, you know, like, you are the performer, you're every part of it. And you're also, it is about you at the same time. The stuff you're writing is about you. But I feel like it can be very easy to sort of just get caught up in your own, as you called it, hamster wheel. And that's a great analogy. And you do have to remember, like, oh yeah, this isn't, you know, that maybe this isn't so healthy, you know, like maybe this isn't the best, maybe this isn't the best approach. So I wonder, when things start to reemerge and when things start to normalize, how will you see things differently, or how will you view and approach your career differently?
I think I just want to approach it with more balance. And what more of a mindset about my family and what I'm doing it for, and more of a mindset that I've already won. Like, the things that I've wanted to accomplish, I did accomplish, and I have to kind of, not that, you know, gets rid of my motivation or my drive. It just kind of relaxes me a little bit from always feeling like, okay, well, what's next? What's next? I got to do something next. And because my wife would always say that to me before. She goes, like, you don't remember. She said, you don't let any of these things land. You don't do any of these things, Lan. You just move on. Next one, next thing. And she'll even stop me. She goes, what did you do on Tuesday? And I'm like, I don't know. I didn't do anything. She's like, no, you were on a nationally televised television show on Tuesday. And you don't even remember. And it's like, so, you know, I think I'm going to start to try to let those things land and do things truly because I want to do them and not just for busy work.
Yeah, and not just because you feel like I need to do this to exist. Your wife sounds amazing, and that is amazing advice to sort of be present, because I think a lot of us as performers just live in such terror that the fire is right behind us. You know, it's like, I got to work, I got to keep, you know, if I stop for even a second, I'm not going to, you know, and now we're in a situation where everything's stopped, you know? Mm-hmm. And so if you get into that habit of not appreciating those moments when they happen, you won't ever appreciate them. There's not like a finish line where you go, okay, I'm all good now. You just,
yeah.
What you adopt is just the habit of never being satisfied. And that's she's given you just fantastic advice.
No, absolutely. She often slows me down and refocuses me on what's truly important and doesn't let me get too much in my head. That's what I really like about her, is that she truly sees the best in me. And the only time where I feel like, you know, I've let her down is if I've, you know, not met that standard. If I'm not, the only time we've ever seen her really mad at me is if I wasn't as kind as she expected me to be, or if I wasn't as patient with someone else that she expected me to be. She kind of always, like, I even talk about it. I put it on my Instagram where it's like, oh, I'm a leading man. And that's kind of how she treats me. She's like, you need to act at all times with class and as you're a leading man. And she's been very helpful in that.
That's fantastic, because the stories that we tell ourselves about ourselves are incredibly powerful, even in ways that we don't realize, even just in micro choices that we might make throughout the day. Oh, I don't know. That's, I probably can't, or I shouldn't, or that's not, you know. And, you know, why not? Why shouldn't you? You know, why can't you take a moment to reassess those and say, oh, no, I am this. I do deserve these good things. I am, you know, you absolutely, because if you don't, then who's going to?
Yeah.
You know,
it's personal power. I've always hated that when I hear a grown adult go, oh, but I can't. He's like, what are you like? Who's stopping you? What right. is truly stopping you but yourself? We all have responsibilities. We all have fear. That was the thing that starting comedy taught me the most, was that, oh, I still, whether I was working at my dumb bank call center job or my cashier job, or I was doing stand up, the fear was the same. I still had to figure out how to feed my son. I still had to figure out how to pay my rent, but the responsibility was all on me. And how, especially when I didn't have a manager, it was like, okay, well, how many bookings can I get? How many people can I reach out to today? Right. And I like that so much more than when I used to go to the grocery store and see my boss pull up and just go, the checks ain't here, y'all. I don't know. And then drive away.
Right.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move, or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
And thank you to Raycon Earbuds for sponsoring this episode of the ID10T podcast, which we now rejoin.
Well, I mean, to the fact that you chose a career that is that can be for a long time frightfully unrewarding, other than just the shows that you're doing and knowing that you love doing it and you're passionate about it. But it can take years before it becomes a, you know, like a way to be able to sustain. Mm-hmm. And again, like I always, especially in Los Angeles, New York comedians, you know, but obviously the caveat is before everything, you know, before the quarantine, but New York comedians really could go around and make a living. You know, LA shows just don't really pay anything. And so to be an LA comic, to come to LA to do comedy is a bold thing to do, because it's for a while, it can be tough to make ends meet, because it just isn't, LA comedy is just not a real paying gig.
That's true. But in the end, I feel like that's one of the things that's helped me at this time, because I feel like there's in comedy, there's like a lot of people who like to specialize, and they're like, okay, well, I just want to be the best stand up in the world, and this is my focus, and this is what I want to do. But I think what we've learned in any business is that you have to diversify. And I think that being out here in LA taught me to diversify, that, oh, I can't count on, if acting might go well one year and it might not one year, and I need stand-up to be there. Stand-up might not be going well, and I need to do some voice acting. And I think having, and it mostly it just came back, like I had a love for vaudeville. I like, you know, and watching those people, like if you only did one thing, you were starving, you know? Right. So I think that's the biggest lesson we're learning right now, is to diversify, to push yourself, to see just how many different avenues your talents can take you into. Because if I didn't say yes to going into some audition to play a giraffe in Trolls a few, like 5 years ago, I might be in a very bad position today.
Right. But you still found a way. I mean, you should never underestimate, much in the same way that your wife is saying, look what you did on Tuesday. You were on a national television show. That's a really big deal. To look back and really appreciate the fact that, you know, you've done well and you've gotten through, you know, even the hard times, you've survived all these things and really created this wonderful life and this wonderful comedy career, and both personally and professionally. And, you know, that's a big deal. Like the fact that you've been able to do that is a really big deal. And I hope, you know, you're able to go, holy shit. I actually, you did earlier. You were like, you know what? I've made it. I feel like I've made it. That's a big deal to be able to do that.
No, yeah, well, I've just done things I never thought I would do, and the more of those things keep happening, and I just try to stay grateful and stay open and keep going to acting class and get more of these blessings. And I'm keenly aware, as a guy who's lived on the fringe, those are the people who I think about most at this time, is because, like, I've applied for food stamps several times. I've been on that area, And those are the people who are the first to be cast aside when things go to shit. And so I worry about that. But at the same time, I'm proud that through help with my son and my family and all that, that I and people like yourself, that I've been able to create a wonderful career and a wonderful life. I love my son. I love my wife. I love my house. Like, I am keenly aware of that. I was in a Zoom meeting with Helen Mirren. That's a sentence I never thought I would say. Yes.
That's incredible. Did you
truly?
Did you, was it a big meeting or a small meeting? Did you get to talk to her?
I got to talk to her. She was very nice. Yeah. No, I'm in this movie coming out on Disney Plus on the 21st, and it's full of stars. It is legitimately full of stars. It's like Sam Rockwell, Angelina Jolie, Helen Mirren, Bryan Cranston, Danny DeVito, and then under that it says Ron Funches. Oh, that makes me so happy.
Oh my God. What is this movie?
It's called The One and Only Ivan. It was going to come out in theaters in 2021, but now it's going to be on Disney Plus in 10 days.
That's really fantastic. I am so happy for you. I mean, the amount of, even just your Quibi show, it was just such a brilliant, it's brilliant for so many reasons, because, you know, obviously I remember when you had asked me to do the show and you go, well, you know, it's sort of like At Midnight. And I go, Ron, At Midnight is sort of like all these other panel shows. Like, we didn't invent the, you know, you basically took a type of a show and not only did you make it your own, but you made it like, you made it upbeat and positive, but still really funny in its positivity. The show, just for people who don't know, is called Nice One, and it's like a 5 to 6 minute panel show. And the premise is you introduce topics and then everyone has to say something, quote, nice about it. So even if it's like a backhanded compliment, it still is like, it's like a reverse, not a reverse roast show, but like an inverted roast show in a way. You're like positive roasting stuff.
Mm-hmm. It forces people to use new muscles that a lot of comedians, I mean, I use it a lot, but a lot of comedians don't use it. That's kind of my style has always been, is what can I find a positive out of what seems like a completely negative situation? And that's what I like about the show and having my friends on there, and then how it has these legitimate compliment battles and seeing people try to go for the jugular and then them being disarmed by genuine compliments. It's really fun.
It's also a fun write. Like you said, it's a fun writing exercise because you can so easily just get caught in your own way of doing things that you don't really think about how you do those things. It's sort of like how we learn to speak whatever our native language is. You don't really think about the structure of language until you learn another language, until you learn, oh, this is why, you know, we put a noun here and a verb here and a pronoun here. Mm-hmm. It was much the same way as a comedy exercise. Oh, this is, you know, like to think about the crafting of a joke structure because you're writing in a different way, because it has a different angle on it, is just such a great exercise. I'll bet everyone loved being able to do it.
A lot of people did. There's some people who just flat out didn't want to do it, like Anthony Jeselnik, of course, because he doesn't want to go against his persona and what he's put out, although I think he could kill it if he wanted to. But yeah, I think a lot of people really like just the difference of it. And I like being a host, and I like being on the other side of it and kind of trying to put shine on all my friends and all the people who I love comedically and get to see them. And that's one of the reasons I really like the show, because I think for the most part, comedians are always put on the lowest end of the totem pole with entertainment. You know, yeah. They call us in to write for other people and do other things like that and then make them look better. And yeah. I like that. That part of my job in this show was to go like, oh, Ricky Lindholm's here. Did you know she was in this and this and Knives Out and this and that? And she's amazing, because that doesn't happen to us all the time. And so I like that was my job, to just be like, you don't know just how many things this person has done. Right. And more than even just like the jokes and stuff, I like putting my friends over. I like them looking like big deals, because to me, they are big deals, because I stand up is my favorite form of those type of entertainments. And so that I want more stand-ups to shine.
I absolutely appreciate what you're saying. And that's one of the things I miss the most about At Midnight, is not only just being able to help show people like, look how funny these people are, look how funny they are, but also discovering people that I might not have known before, which, you know, in 600 episodes happened a lot. And I discovered a lot of new people. I was like, oh my God, I really am a fan of this person now. But it was so much fun to be on the other side of the podium from you. And I was just so delighted and happy and really excited to be a panelist on your show. You did such an amazing job, and it was a blast. It really was. And also not having the pressure of having to run the show was fantastic. I get to just like write a handful of jokes, come in, deliver them, leave. Like that part was really fun too.
Yeah, you still did a good job though. You still, anytime I needed some help, you were there, and I appreciated it.
How many episodes did you do, and when are they available?
We did 10 episodes. They'll be out August 24th on Quibi. So people check that out, because I think, you know, the bar there is not very high. So if just like a good group of people watch this show, I can maybe get a second season and rehire all my friends. And I like making sure my friends have money.
I really hope so, because for anyone who's listening, it's like I said, they're 5 to 6 minute episodes. They're super quick to watch. They move really fast. It's just, you know, fun joke, fun joke, fun joke, fun joke right after another. And then it's over. Would you have the ability at some point to expand it? Like, were you able to take it and do like a 21 minute version of the show somewhere eventually?
I think we could. I absolutely think we could. I think it's just about adding different segments and kind of, you know, probably stealing more stuff from At Midnight.
Take whatever you want. Honestly, I would be delighted. Nothing would make me happier than you to be able to do a, you know, like a panel show, mm-hmm. an extended panel show. It's so funny to me that in America, there are a ton of them in England, but America just does not have that many panel shows. And I think about why there's so many great comedians.
Not expensive to make.
And comedians love doing them because they don't have to burn through their material. They're not expensive to make, like you said. They can be topical. They can be evergreen. They can be, you know, yours is themed around compliments. They can be tailored to any kind of thing that you want. Like, it just seems crazy to me that there aren't more panel shows.
I absolutely agree. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I've been so excited for the show to come out, because it fills a hole that of shows I like. Like, you know, since your show's been gone and then they got, you know, they brought in the David Spade show for a while, which I thought was amazing. And I truly didn't understand that decision. I was like, I don't know any other shows on your network that are bringing in Adam Sandler and all these other people to come hang out. But there's just a whole, because I think people love, they love that. They love when they meet someone new and funny they never heard before. That's what happened to me. Like, your show did that for me so much. I mean, just the way that my club numbers were changing from going to that show. Like, I want to be able to do that for other people.
I know that feeling you're talking about, and it's wonderful, because I had that feeling when I used to do Chelsea Lately. I watched my club numbers go up. People would come in, you know, there were like a few people that would come in from Talking Dead, a few from G4. And then the Chelsea panel show thing, it was like, oh my God, I get to be a comedian on a show and people know that I'm a comedian. And that's great. Cause when you host a show, sometimes people show up and they go, oh, I didn't know you did comedy. And you're like, I've been doing that a long time. You know? So when you get to go on something as a comedian, people go to see you on purpose as a comedian, and it's the best. And I want that for all the comedians, because it's wonderful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I just found that I didn't know, like, it was almost like when I got into acting, it was finding my second child. I thought I just wanted to be a stand-up. And then when I got into acting, I was like, oh, I truly love this. I truly love when I fail at it. I love getting better at it. I love it. And then when I was coming to host this show, it was more this like them coming to me and being like, oh, we think you'd be good at this. I'd never hosted a show before. And it took me about going through the first episode, and I fell in love with that just as much as I did stand up and acting. And I was like, I love being charming. I love putting people over, and I love wearing a nice suit. So this is exactly what I like doing. Like, whether it's this show for many more seasons or something else, I want to host things. I really like it.
And I hope you get to do it more too. Like I said, you did a great job, and it just is another muscle, you know. It's just like, you know, it's fun to play other characters. It's fun to do live action. It's fun to do voiceover. Stand up is so much you, but hosting is also you, but you're bringing you to a structure. Mm-hmm. And it kind of takes on a life of its own. And I always, you know, whenever I'm hosting a show, I always like to say, like, without sounding too hippy dippy about it, like, the show will kind of tell you what it needs if you're listening. Everyone's a little bit different. It creates its own chemistry. It's its own organism. And you're just there to kind of guide it and be a part of it and just listen to what it needs. And that part's really fun. I have no doubt that you'll get to host more stuff, especially now that, you know, like, I know that some scripted things are going back, but I just have a feeling that there's going to be a bit more of a demand for unscripted things, because they'll just be easier to shoot, you know, mm-hmm. in a topsy-turvy, you know, pandemic world.
Well, I love how you put that, saying that the show will tell you what it needs, because I think that is a lesson I learned, because I think going through the first maybe the first two tapings, I didn't know what it needed at that time. And then I realized pretty quickly that I was like, oh, I'm the cheerleader here. I'm here to get everything over. And so from that moment then I started, because we had a warm-up comic and he was great at his job. But then I started, whenever they bring the contestants out, I just started having them like, hey, go, hey, play the old Bulls intro music that I grew up listening to. And I'm going to intro all these people. So I'm going to get everything pumped up before the taping even starts. And then like before we're even starting, I'm just like, you know, from at midnight, 6-2, you know, like all these things, just having fun, pumping people up. I gave you a couple extra inches of height.
I appreciate that. You gave me several. I'm 5'10 in thick shoes.
Before we'd even start, they'd have to like stop the thing and pat me down because I'd be sweating already. But I was like, oh, this is what this show needs. It needs a cheerleader.
Yeah.
And so I just started playing that role.
Yeah. And every time you start a new show, you can have an idea of what you think it is, but it's a relationship. You know, you form a relationship with it and you just don't know until you do it. We were so fortunate that we had Meltdown as a space that in the 3 months, 4 months leading up to the premiere of At Midnight, we did a live show almost every week at Meltdown to sort of learn, like, what does the show want? How does it, what really works? It should work as a live show because ultimately it's a comedy show with comedians. And you did some of those shows and helped us form what it became. And I'm appreciative of that because there's always a learning curve. And there still was even once we got on the air. But to eliminate that learning curve as much as possible, to understand like what is the nature of the show and how does it work and how does it relate to the audience and, you know, what are the beats, was just such an invaluable thing to be able to do. And I know when you go back for hopefully season two, you'll be armed with all this amazing experience and information that you will then get to build on top of from that.
Yeah, I mean, that's just life and all of life, right? Just trying to build on the previous experiences to get to where you want to go. And I love that. I love the process and whatever it is. If it's more nice one or more whatever it is, I'm just happy to be working and part of this community. Like, I love, that's one thing this quarantine has helped me remind me the most, is this, like, man, I'm so lucky, the all the kind people, all the unique minds, all the hilarious people that I get to be surrounded by in my life. And that wasn't any accident. I put myself here and I'm one of those people, and I love that.
Yeah, I mean, I really hope you get to do more hosting stuff, if it's Nice One or whatever else it is. I really hope you're working on a Ron Funches centered scripted show, whether it's a multicam or a single cam or whatever. I just think, you know, I think you would have such a fun time being the star of your own scripted show, hosting stuff on the side, dropping in to do voiceover, dropping into, you know, live action movies with the Helen Mirrens of the world and the, you know, all these amazing, and the Sam Rockwells of the world. And, you know, it seems like you're really laying the groundwork for this really incredibly full type of a career that will satisfy every kind of performance urge that you have.
Well, I'm working towards it. I appreciate you saying that. And yeah, I'm just trying to lay the groundwork for a long career. I want to be here for a long time. I want to, you know, I want to die still, like, be like, oh, well, we got to finish that voiceover he did before we die. I want to be one of those end credits at the end. They got to go in memory of, I want that.
I know voiceover artists who that's their specialty. Like, they'll go in and mimic voices, either if someone dies or if someone else, just like if it's a big star who's like not available or they just don't want to do it or whatever, and they just need like a hey, you know, or like something, they'll go in and drop in those voices. The Ron Funches soundalikes will come in.
Well, hopefully not for 30, 40, 50 more years, but
hopefully not for 30 or 40 or 50 more years. What else are you pitching anything at the moment? Like, what are you actively involved in during this time?
Yeah, I'm working on my own show about my life and about being a single dad of a son with autism and how funny that the life that can be. And then I'm just doing a lot of voiceovers. Got that Disney Plus movie. I'm in the Harley Quinn show that's on HBO Max. And then the Quibi game show. And I'm just at this, you know, I'm working on my live stream show, like I said, September 5th. Going out on YouTube. I'm just trying to find any avenues I can to stay busy and productive and creatively fulfilled. But so far, yeah, the show about my son and I is my number one priority.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Do you ever feel like you're settling? For your foundation, that is. Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation doesn't settle into fine lines and wrinkles. With SPF 20 and moisturizing Pro Vitamin B5, this foundation not only provides medium coverage and a natural finish, but also protects and nourishes your skin. And the best part? The blurring sponge tip applicator makes application a breeze. Say goodbye to cakey, uneven foundation, and hello to a flawless, radiant complexion. Try our new foundation today and see the difference for yourself at amazon.com/instant eraser foundation.
How do you motivate yourself when, you know, I'm asking because before quarantine, I had a sort of a ritual every morning of going to this one cafe. It was my writing time for 90 mm-hmm. minutes. I would literally eat the same breakfast every day, which may not surprise you. And just write, you know, just tweak and write and go over old mm-hmm. jokes and try to, and I found it really hard to motivate to do those types of things without, even though I have my whole office right here, I'm in it. You can see I'm in it. But without sort of that ritualistic structure, how are you motivating yourself to make sure that you do take time? Are you working on stuff every single day or do you set aside time during the week or is it just whenever it strikes you? How are you approaching that?
No, I'm trying to keep a structure. Actually, Donick Cary, I'm you might be familiar with, but if not, he's a tremendous writer. He wrote for I believe The Simpsons, but I know he wrote for Letterman, and he also wrote and created this movie called Good Trip that's on Netflix. And he came on my podcast, and he just told me that this acronym that he had been doing in quarantine to keep himself together, he calls it Mr. Awe, which is just meditate, read, art, write, exercise. And he just tries to make sure he does that every single day. And I just kind of adopted that. And so, which doesn't happen every day, but on a good day, we'll wake up together. My wife and I will make the bed, we'll meditate, and then I'll go and exercise. And then right after my exercise, I'll go to my office and just do a free write for about a half an hour or so. And then watch some type of good art or something that I consider to be high art and just make sure that it's done every day. And then I just try to make sure I give myself a weekend. Like, even though the weekends don't seem to be as valid these days, I try to make sure, like, okay, Saturday and Sunday, I don't do much at all. I play music very loud. My wife hates. She's a very much a silence person. She loves silence. But on Saturday and Sunday, she goes off to the pool house in the morning and I plump music as loud as I want. And I dance all over the house and I smoke a lot of pot on the weekends. And then during the week, because sometimes it can be difficult, I have my weed in a little kitchen safe that has an hour little clock and it doesn't open until the evening.
That is fantastic. You've structured it in a way that, I mean, to know yourself that well, to know like, these are the things that I need to do to stay focused. And I need to take these temptations out of the equation until a certain time when I can give myself permission to do that. It's really great because you're very in tune with how you work and also allowing yourself the permission to enjoy whatever it is, whether it's loud music or whatever it is, in a structured way. I mean, you know, to a 20-year-old, that must sound like, what, fuck you, just play music. But as you get older, you really do, there is that sort of unromantic process of like, you have to schedule leisure. You have to schedule this, you know, you'll appreciate it when you do it. It's great to know yourself that well.
Truly. I think that's one of the biggest lessons I've learned in my life, to kind of stop getting mad at who I am and being like, oh, why can't you eat one cookie and put the rest away? Or why can't you just smoke in the late at night without it being in a safe? And just being like, well, I'm not perfect. This is who I am. I know when I'm motivated. I know what I need to do. And I keep just telling myself, well, I know the rules that make me productive and what works for me. And anytime I break those rules, it never works out. As many times as I tell myself, this time it'll work out, this time it's different, it never does. So it's not like, you know, following everyone else's rules and what works for them. It's just me knowing me and going, these are the rules that work for me. I need to get sleep. I need to eat well. I need to exercise every day. Other people may be able to get away with not doing that. They may have better genes than me. They may be able to do other things, but I'm not in that position. I have to do these things in order for me to function. And so I just choose to do them now, instead of ignoring it like when I was younger.
Yeah, I mean, that really negative self-talk thing too is also it's generally comparative thinking, right? Oh, a better person would do this. A different person would do that. Someone else, you know, that other really successful person probably does. And it's like, yeah. Just, you know, focus on you, understand you, do what works for you. And you found it sounds like you found a nice way to get the most productive work out of yourself and not beat yourself up at the same time.
Yeah. Just still have fun, still enjoy life. You know, I still play several hours of games a day. I still get high pretty much every day, but I'm still productive, still writing jokes, still making sure I go to every one of my writing meetings and stuff. And it's nice to have that balance. Cause I think when I wasn't following those rules, then I had to like shove these things and be like, oh, well, we got to do it. And I can't pay attention to my son right now because there's a deadline and I have to hit this deadline. And now I just kind of just go like, oh, my son needs me. I got to go talk to him because that's my job as a father. This work will be here. I'll get back to it after he's done needing me. And that's been a big shift in me.
That's really nice. And I don't think, you know, going back to something that you talked about at the beginning of the podcast, working because you enjoy it and not because you feel like, you know, oh, I'm not valid unless I do all this work. Like, I don't think most people are going to get to the end of their life and go, boy, I sure wish I had obsessed over work more. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So it's good. It's really good to have that balance. And, you know, I'm just glad to see that you're able to be thriving in a difficult, you know, in this time where no one knows what the fuck is going on.
Yeah, it's difficult. And, you know, day-to-day struggles, obviously mental struggles, but yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Cause when this did happen, we didn't look at each other and go like, oh, I'm so glad I took this gig, or I'm so glad I had this thing. We looked at my wife and I go, man, I'm so glad we went to Japan in January.
Yeah.
I'm so glad we took that time, because now who knows when or if we'll ever get to go. And it was such an amazing time. We got to ride go-karts through the Tokyo streets. It was awesome.
Did you do the Mario Superkart thing?
Before they got taken down because of copyright. Yes.
God, they've been doing that Lydia and I went to Japan for our honeymoon in 2016 and they were doing that then. So they've been doing it for years. I'm actually surprised it took that long if there was a copyright issue.
Yeah, they finally got taken down by Nintendo, I believe. And I think we got in there a couple of months before they got shut down. But it was so much fun.
Did you dress up as Mario? Like, I saw people actually dressed up as characters doing it.
I dressed up as a bear and my wife dressed up as Minnie Mouse.
Oh, that's fantastic. That is fantastic. And the carts, by the way, are like little go-karts. They're not like full-sized cars. Mm. So we would watch people drive by and go, I hope that's safe. But I guess it was something that was just so common that maybe the traffic was used to it.
I think it's something that you could only do in Japan. It's not something you could do in Los Angeles traffic. They will just run over your go-kart and kill that whole crew.
You would definitely get run over by a bus
who would
not be able to see you, you know, because you're those go-karts have such a low profile that you would definitely get run over by a bus, or the streets here are not in great condition. You would definitely like, you'd hit a pothole and then that would be it.
You flip it. Yeah.
I'm so glad you got to do that. Yeah. We loved Japan. I miss it there. I really do hope we get to go back.
Yeah.
You
know, we absolutely loved it. We truly, like, I loved Tokyo and I got to go to the Tokyo Dome and see some Japanese wrestling. And my wife loved Kyoto and all the shrines and all the peacefulness and more traditional areas, the Maikos, the Geikos, all the geishas. So, I mean, I think just Japan has just something for everyone. It's such a, and I never felt safer in my life. Just, you're like, there's truly no guns here. You can feel it.
Yeah, it was really, I'm so glad we went there, and I'm so glad we were able to go there. And I think, you know, we'll be able to do those things again. I mean, we went to Italy last year, and then it was the same thing. We're like, I am so glad we went to Italy last year, that we actually scheduled the trip and took the time and didn't let some, like, I have an audition or I got a work thing. I mean, how many times have you, like, put your life on hold because of an audition that didn't pan out, or a show that you didn't, was just like, you know, I kind of tried to force this into my life because I thought I had to. And, you know, you don't ever remember those. You kind of remember the wonderful life experiences that you let go.
No, absolutely. 100% agree. And I think that's, you know, where the mindset has to change, and it's where it has changed for me. I want more Japan, more sitting on a bench in Oklahoma City with my wife, just waving at people like we live in the Midwest.
Yeah, we do get to, as comedians, we do get spoiled in that way, where we get to see so much of, you know, even if you just are toured domestically, we just get to see so much of the country that most people never get to see. Like, who would ever, like, why would most people think, like, oh, I got to go to this one small town, to this one college that in the middle of, you know, Indiana or whatever. And you really get to, it's really interesting to see such a cross section of, of our country that most people will never get to see.
Yeah. I think it's we have the best as far as, like, being, knowing what real people like and what the real America, what real people want, which is always so funny, because then we go to these meetings and they tell us, like, well, we don't know if you fit in with what is going on, what Americans are thinking. Like, well, no, I tour all over America.
Yeah, I understand. I fit in. Yeah,
I understand them. They like me. So chill out.
Yeah. I have actual physical data. I have numbers. I can show you, you know, I can show you. But again, that's just, you know, I wonder if a lot of that'll change, because as these traditional structures are all sort of breaking apart and media is all sort of breaking apart, it'll reform in some way. And I wonder if a lot of those, you know, if a lot of those middle range decision makers who like to just keep a ball in the air without having to say yes or no, because they don't want to take a risk or make a decision or, you know, get blamed for anything, if a lot of that'll just sort of get folded aside, and maybe there will be more balance in our business. Who knew? I hope. I don't know.
I think either way, it's an upheaval. It's the Wild West. Things are weird and different. And to me, that's good. That means that there's the ability for people to move up, move around. Like, a lot of people are leaving, you know, people are like, well, how do you feel about Joe Rogan leaving to California? That must suck. And I'm like, what do you mean that sucks? It means there's more space for more people. It means whenever the Comedy Store opens back up, my slot is earlier. So it means a lot of positives for me.
Well, yeah, now it kind of doesn't. I think people are starting to realize, like, wait a minute, it may not entirely matter where I live if I can. Mm-hmm. I mean, there obviously are some jobs where you really need to be there to, you know, to be hands on with it. But now that we're seeing the success of Zoom meetings and podcasts were never a thing I thought couldn't be done in person, and now I see that they can very easily be done, not in the same room. I'm sure a lot of people are going, wait a minute, I could just live in Idaho on a farm. Like, why do I need to be in the hustle and bustle of, you know, if I'm a touring comic, all I have to do is just get to a plane when that's a thing again. And I don't know, what do I need to, you know,
Yeah, I think that's good. Live where you want to live. I've always hated when people come to Los Angeles and all they talk about is how much they hate it here and wish that they were somewhere else. I'm like, well, then go somewhere else. Like, you know, I personally, I love where I live. I love my home. I don't have any plans to leave. I love living in Los Angeles, but I think anyone, doesn't matter what your job, especially, you know, as we get more and more into the future.
Yeah.
Live where you want to live.
Yeah. Most things don't shoot here, by the way. Like, you know, sitcoms shoot here and a lot of host driven stuff shoots here. But for the most part, most scripted things do not shoot in Los Angeles. So,
yeah, you just might as well live in Vancouver, Canada.
You could, you know, you can send in your auditions via video or FaceTime or Zoom or whatever. And then if they tell you to go to a city to shoot a thing, then you go and shoot a thing. So, but I agree with you. We like LA and, you know, I suspect we'll be here for a while, but every once in a while, I'll just look up farms in the middle of, you know, like, oh, wow, that's real nice. Wow. 100 acres, you know, and it's not expensive and you could just grow, have bees and have goats and, you know, grow fruits. And
okay. That's that Animal Crossing in you.
play Animal Crossing and real life Animal Crossing. I'm going to put my peach trees next to my apple trees, you know? by the time this goes up, do you know if Comedy Crossing, the Animal Crossing comedy show, does that live online afterwards somewhere? Does it go on YouTube or something? Do you know? Because by the time this goes up, your show will have passed.
Even if they don't, just check out the show when I'm not on it.
Yeah.
It's the show keeps going. It's an amazing idea.
Oh, it's totally amazing. Okay. So I found it at comedycrossing.eventbrite.com. And there's one coming up September 4th, which is after this is posting. So people will be able to catch the next show if they're right on top of listening to the podcast when they go up. But yeah, if you're just a fan of comedy or a fan of Animal Crossing and a fan of comedy, check it out because it is such a brilliant idea for a show. You know, again, to see how people are adapting and how people are taking comedy and able to express it, you know, like we were talking about with Nice One, to express it in different ways that are unique to their interests and their point of view. It is one of my favorite things is watching people be resilient and adaptive. It really is an incredible time for that.
Absolutely. An incredible time to specialize and be yourself. Cause I think right now no one's going to have any interest in anything. Just run of the mill. That's trying to shoot across the bow. You know, at this time, I think you have to be genuinely yourself and providing something unique for people to pay attention. And I just always try to focus on that. Like I see that like with Andrew Schultz and a lot of comedians who are just honing in on themselves, which is great at a time like this.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you want to promote? Is there anything else besides the podcast, the Getting Better podcast, Nice One, which I think is available
August 24th
on Quibi. Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to promote?
I'm in a cartoon called Hoops that has Natasha Leggero and Jack Johnson and Rob Riggle. That'll be on Netflix August 21st. And then, the same day, that's the day that the one and only Ivan comes out on Disney Plus. And then just my live stream show September 5th. I want to see, I'm put my own money up to produce this show. So I would like not to lose it. So please buy a ticket.
How long is the set that you're doing?
I'm probably going to do about 40, 45, and I'll have it'll be like my road show. My regular road openers, Blair Saki and Gabe Dinger, will open for me, and then I will come out and do a mix of material that I was doing a little bit before this happened, things I've been writing since this happened, and talking about my marriage.
Now, will you still use some of this if you shoot a special in the next?
Definitely. This is going to be deleted after 24 hours so that I can resell it at a high price.
That's so brilliant. That's so good. It hadn't even occurred to me to do that. I was like, God, if I do the material and it's just out there, I don't know. Oh, yeah. You could just take it down. You don't have to leave it up.
Yeah, no, and then it's all in the marketing. It is not a special. It is a live stream event. Please come on by and watch me work on this stuff.
And how many people, how is the, how are, who's producing like the audience section of it?
Well, it's like partially me and partially Chris Titus. He has some people that he's bringing in, and then I'm reaching out to some of the Los Angeles comedy audience well-knowns, you know, like Jake and Aldrin, and I'll reach out to a few other people and just make sure they're comfortable with it, that they've been quarantined and everyone will get, you know, temperature checked and sign waivers and all that stuff, and they'll be wearing masks while the performance is going on. But yeah, I'm going to reach out to people who I know and love stand-up comedy here in LA and try to fill the audience with them.
Excellent. I will watch. I really hope, I hope it's fun and not just a, like you said before, oh gosh, I got through that. I think you will like it because once you're in the rhythm of, it'll feel, oh yeah, this, oh right, this mode, totally forgot about this. Yeah, I think it'll be satisfying.
I think I'll really love it just because I never feel more at home than when I'm on the stage. So the fact that I'll be on the stage and the fact that there will be some live people there. And I've done many, many shows with less than 10 people. So this will be fine.
Those are the character building shows from early on in stand-up where it's like, oh, two people showed up and they're not sitting anywhere near each other. You're right. It's just like, it's like the early days of going around to different open mics and just like, hey man, we're just going to get through this. I'm just going to do what I planned and we're just going to, you know. But I think those people in particular will be so happy to have an experience that they've been missing for so long. So I think it's going to be great for everybody.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
Well, Ron Funges, it's so good to see you. I'm so happy for everything that you're working on. And, you know, anytime you have an open seat to come on this podcast, I will help you do anything that I possibly can to further anything that makes you happy.
I appreciate that. You've always said that, and more than saying it, you've always proved it. And I truly appreciate that. You've always looked out for me and I felt for no other reason than that you think I'm really funny and a good person. And those are the reasons.
I send you virtual hugs and I hope to get to see you in person soon.
Absolutely. Same to you and to your wife as well.
All right. The end.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.